Today we are concluding our series called Future Me that we've been in over the past several weeks. And throughout this series, we have talked about this certain principle of life, that the choices I make today will determine the kind of life I live tomorrow. The choices I'm making today and this week and this month will paint the picture of what my life will be 5 and 10 and 20 years from now. And the same is true for you. The choices you are making now will determine what tomorrow looks like for you. And so here's the big idea that we've hit in this series over and over. The decisions I make today determine the life I live tomorrow. Today you is making decisions that will determine what tomorrow you looks like. And so throughout this series, we have talked about major factors in our decision making. What causes us to make certain decisions? And the first major factor we've talked about is that I make decisions out of my heart. That primarily decisions, moral decisions, are not made out of our heads. It's not that having all the information enables us to make the right moral decisions. Knowing the consequences, understanding the results of certain decisions is not enough. According to the Bible, moral decisions are not made out of our heads, but out of our core, or what the Bible calls the heart. It is out of the heart that we make these decisions. And we talked about this is why people who are really smart, intelligent individuals make really dumb decisions. It's because moral decisions are made out of the heart. We talked about why it's not enough to give someone information to prevent them from making certain decisions. For example, we talked about how giving teenagers all the information about drug use, all the stats, showing them the pictures, telling them horror story after horror story is not enough to keep teenagers from trying drugs, because that is a moral decision that is made not out of the head, but out of the heart. And so we talked about this way that we have of developing our hearts by gathering in corporate worship together, that we do this not just out of obligation, we do this not just out of tradition, but when we gather in corporate worship, that God does something in our hearts, that God changes us, changes our core. And so then later when we are faced with these moral decisions, we are able to make the right decisions. And so over the weeks and months and years of being faithful in worship, God molds and shapes and changes our hearts so that we are able to make the decisions that honor and please Him, the right good decisions in life. And the second factor that we've talked about in our decision making are our relationships. That my relationships determine so much about the decisions that I make. And I said that especially if you are young, if you are a teenager, or you are in your 20s, this is critical. If you're a teenager, show me your five closest friends, and I can predict what life will be like for you in the next 2, 5, 10 years based on the friendships that you have now. And it's not because I'm a prophet. It's because this is such a powerful principle that we find in Scripture. It's such a powerful principle of life that our relationships, our closest friendships, will determine the quality and the direction of our lives. And so we talked about the critical nature of being a part of a small group of other followers of Christ, how those relationships can encourage you and shape you and help you in making decisions in life. Today we're going to talk about the third major factor in our decision making. And here's the third one. In my decision making, my faith plays a huge role. My faith specifically in God determines so much about my decision making. And this is especially true when decisions are made in difficult times, when we face the storms of life, when we face some incredibly hard time, my faith in, my trust in God makes a huge difference. Even when my heart is good and my relationships are good, if my faith in God is weak, it can cause me to make bad decisions. Years ago, when I was serving in another church, we took a group of students on a retreat, and because of the nature of the topic on this retreat, we took the guys and we had them in one session, and we took the girls and we put them in another place and had another session for the girls. And in the girls' session, this lady volunteer stood up and she shared her story with these girls, these teenage girls, and she said that when she was in high school, that she was involved in a relationship, and that the guy in this relationship pressured her into a physical relationship and said, "If you don't, I'm going to leave you." And she said at that point in her life, she did not have enough trust that God would provide, that God would be faithful. She didn't have the faith in God to say to this guy, "All right, fine, jerk, just leave, that's fine." She did not trust God enough, and she was so scared that she would end up alone that she gave in, and she said, "I made a decision because of my lack of faith that I regret to this day." And you can take that story and you can apply it across all areas of life. When our faith is weak, when our trust in God is weak, we will make bad decisions. When we do not have enough faith that God will be there, that God will provide, that God will come through, that God will be faithful, then it will lead us to make bad decisions. There's a story that's found in Matthew chapter 14 that I want us to look at today that shows how this principle practically works. There's a way that we can strengthen our faith. The way that we do this, the way that we strengthen our faith is by serving, is by doing things for God. And when God works through us, when God does something in us, then we are able to see our faith in God grow. And here's the principle. When I do what I can do, and God does what only He can do, my faith grows. When I do what I know how to do, and then God works through me and does what only God can do, and I see God work, then my faith grows. In this particular passage, we see this playing out in two stories. They are very familiar stories, but stories that likely you've not linked together before. Just to set up the first story, Jesus did ministry around this large lake called the Sea of Galilee. In all of these towns around the lake, he did a lot of ministry. And at some point, Jesus needed a break. At some point, he needed a vacation. And so Jesus got into a boat and traveled across the Sea of Galilee to the other side, to a remote location. It was a large lake, 8 miles across. And so Jesus went to the other side to have a little bit of a break. And the only problem was, at this point, the crowd was enamored with Jesus. He was a rock star. And so the Bible says they rushed on foot around the lake. And that when Jesus landed in this remote location, there was this massive crowd waiting on him. And so Jesus decided this was going to be a working vacation, that he was going to minister to the crowds there. He spent all day healing and teaching the crowds. And that's where our story picks up. If you've got a Bible, it's Matthew 14, and we're going to pick up in verse 15. Here's what we read. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. Okay, stop there for a moment. This is likely the most familiar miracle of Jesus. It is the only miracle of Jesus that is found in all four Gospels, what we call the first four books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And maybe because it's in all four, and maybe because it's the most famous miracle of Jesus, it has also received the most scrutiny of all of the miracles of Jesus. Scholars have, for a number of years, tried to explain away this particular miracle. They've presented all kinds of thoughts and all kinds of theories as to logically how Jesus pulled this off. Two of the most common theories are, number one, that Jesus had a secret stash of food that he had stored in these caves that are kind of littered all around the Sea of Galilee. And then there was this massive crowd that was there, and Jesus had the stash of food in one of the caves, and the disciples would come to him, that he would go and he would get the food and he would give it to the disciples, and they would go out and they would serve, and they'd come back to Jesus, he'd go back to the cave, get more food, and it looked like a miracle to the crowd, but really it was just a sleight of hand on the part of Jesus, who went to the cave and kept pulling out this food to give to people. That's one of the more popular theories. The other popular theory is that there were these women who were intrigued with Jesus, and that they were there that day as Jesus was doing ministry, and as it became nighttime, he turned to these women and he said, "Go to the villages, get some food, and bring it back." And so Jesus, when he served the crowd, really, he had gone to these women, gotten the food, he gave it to the disciples, they gave it out to the crowd, and it appeared to be a miracle, these scholars argue, but in fact, he had gotten food from these women, given it to the disciples, they gave it to the crowd. These scholars, for some reason, have tried to come up with a logical explanation as to how Jesus appeared to have fed thousands to the crowd. Now, here's the thing. I've read all four accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The only problem with the theories that these scholars have proposed is the crowd that day did not know where their food had come from. They didn't know, and honestly, they didn't care. All they knew was they were hungry and their bellies were filled. They didn't know if the food came from a cave, if the food came from some women, if it just dropped out of the air. They didn't know, and they did not care. They didn't see what had happened. And so if that's the case, if this miracle was not performed for the crowd, then why did Jesus perform this miracle? Or here's a better way to phrase it. If Jesus did not perform this miracle for the crowd, for whom did Jesus perform the miracle? For the disciples. These men that we technically call the apostles, these 12 men who had left their families and left their careers and left their homes to follow this man named Jesus around as he did ministry, and these men who at this point weren't exactly sure who Jesus was. They knew he was someone special. They knew that he was sent by God. They knew Jesus had incredible power. But at this point, they weren't sure, could Jesus be trusted 100%? Could Jesus be trusted all the time? And so this opportunity arose for Jesus to teach them that they could trust him and for Jesus to grow their faith. And so Jesus had been teaching all day, and the sun began to go down, and the disciples saw the crowd was getting restless, and they heard the stomachs began to grumble, and so they go to Jesus, and they say to Jesus, "Hey, Jesus, you need to send these people home or at least send them into the villages. They're getting hungry. It's time for the crowd to disperse. And at that point, Jesus very easily could have done that. I mean, he came to this remote location for a vacation anyway. At that point, it would have been very easy for him to say, that's it, show's over, I'm done, go home. But Jesus understood that this was an opportunity to grow the faith of the disciples. So they came and they said, hey, send them home. And Jesus said, nope, we're not sending them home. I want you to go and to give the crowd something to eat. The disciples say, hey, that's great. We're happy to do it, Jesus. There's just this one teeny tiny little problem. Jesus, you see, we've got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, and that's it. There's no more food. And see, Jesus, there are thousands who are here. Even if we gave them each the tiniest little morsel of food, there would not be enough to feed this crowd. And Jesus said, okay, bring me what you've got. Just bring me what you've got. What do you have? I want you to bring it to me. And Jesus took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he prayed over that. Then he said to the disciples, I want you to go and to begin to serve. You go and do. You go and pass out food. And the disciples obeyed, and they served, and they did what they could do. And then Jesus did what only Jesus could do. And the disciples saw 5 loaves and 2 fish. Feed thousands. Not just feed thousands, but when they were done, they collected the leftover food and had 12 basketfuls of food left. And the disciples in that moment did what they could do. They saw Jesus do what only Jesus could do. This miracle happened, and they learned this incredible lesson. Yeah, the crowd that day, they had their bellies filled, but the disciples had their faith jars filled, and they learned, when Jesus asked me to do something, I can trust him completely. Now, it's the second story in this passage that ties together with this one that helps us understand how our faith plays such a role in our decision making. They fed the crowd. Maybe Jesus taught a little bit more, but at some point Jesus said, it's getting dark, that's it. Everyone's got to leave. And then Jesus said to his disciples, I need some alone time. I'm going to go to a remote place, but I will meet you on the other side of the lake. Get in the boat, go to the other side of the lake, and I will meet you there. And so the disciples did. 12 men in the boat going across the Sea of Galilee. It's dark. The storm comes up. The waves are beating against the boat. It's scary in the middle of this large lake. The storm comes up. That's where our story picks up. Verse 25. Shortly before dawn, by the way, the literal translation there is the fourth watch of the night, which meant it was sometime between 3 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the morning, meaning it was really dark in the middle of the night, and there was this massive storm that had come up, and they're in this boat in the middle of this Sea of Galilee. So shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. Okay, get the picture. 12 men in the boat, just kind of stuck. The wind is beating against the boat. They're rowing. They can't go anywhere. The waves have kicked up. They are worried that the thing's going to capsize, and they are going to drown in the middle of the Sea of Galilee there. I mean, it is literally a storm of life that they are in the middle of. And if it's not scary enough, in the middle of the night, suddenly they see a ghost coming towards them. I mean, the Bible here says they were terrified. I think that's an understatement. These guys were freaking out. I mean, the boat is about to capsize and a ghost is coming. You know, they are getting ready to die of a collective heart attack at this point. when they hear the familiar voice of Jesus. Do not be afraid. It's not a ghost. It's me. Now, here's where the story really gets interesting. 12 guys in the boat together who had all the night before served Jesus by serving the crowd. They had all passed out food. They had witnessed the miracle of Jesus. But one of them was paying a little bit more attention when that miracle happened. When Peter was serving food and he saw that 5 loaves and 2 fish served thousands and that Jesus somehow praying over this food had caused this miracle to happen in Peter's heart and in Peter's mind, this light bulb came on. And he learned this lesson. When Jesus asked me to do something, I can trust him. Even when it doesn't make sense, even when reality tells me something else, even when logically it doesn't make sense, when Jesus tells me to do something, I can trust him completely. And so Peter, in the boat, among the 12 guys who are there, cries out to Jesus and says, "Hey, Jesus, if it's really you, tell me to come to you." And Jesus says to Peter, "Come, come." And it was the lesson that Peter learned that previous day as they served food that gave him the faith to step out of a boat onto the water. Peter then did what Peter could do, trusting that Jesus would do what only Jesus could do, and that was give him the ability to walk on the water and to walk towards him. He learned this lesson, so his faith grew, and in the midst of a storm, Peter was able to trust Jesus, even when it didn't make sense. Now, my guess is you're likely familiar with this story. It's one that's been read in church a lot. You've probably read this story yourself. If you've not read it, you've heard the story before, and so you know the rest of the story. Peter gets out of the boat, and he starts to walk to Jesus, and suddenly he thinks, "This is crazy. I'm walking on water. People don't do that. You can't walk on water. This doesn't make any sense. And there are the waves and the wind and the storm and Jesus or this ghost in front of me." And Peter looked down at the water and his faith wavered. And what happened? He began to sink. And Jesus had to rescue Peter out of the water. And so it's easy to be critical of Peter. How come, Peter, you didn't trust Jesus? You were walking on water. Why didn't you trust Jesus? Why did your faith become weak? But what we forget is there were 11 guys who wouldn't even get out of the boat. There were 11 who had seen Jesus perform the exact same miracle some 10 or 12 or 14 hours earlier. And they weren't willing to get out of the boat. At least Peter was willing to take that step of faith. He was willing to give it a shot. And I'll be honest. If I'd been Peter, I would have sunk too. I mean, even when my faith in God is strong, even when my faith in God and my trust of God is strong, when the storms of life hit, I'll doubt my faith will waver as well. At least Peter was willing to take that chance and to step out and to walk on water towards Jesus. Where did Peter get that kind of faith to be willing to step out of a boat onto the Sea of Galilee in the middle of the night and to walk towards Jesus? He got it hours before through the simple act of serving. And when Peter did what he could do and Jesus did what only Jesus can do and Peter witnessed this amazing miracle of Jesus, his faith became strong, so that when he was in the middle of the storm, he was able to trust in Jesus. This is why we push serving so much around here. This is why we push this as a church. Yeah, sure, practically, we need people to serve for the ministry to happen. Yeah, we need people to serve for second graders to be taught and for sixth graders to be taught and for juniors in high school to be taught. We need people to serve in the parking lot and on the worship team and in all these different areas. But the main reason we push this is we believe that through serving, your faith is able to grow. And when you bring Jesus what you've got and you do what you can do, and then Jesus does what only he can do, and you see God working through you, your faith grows. And when your faith in God is strong, when your trust in Him is strong, when you face the storms of life, when you face some difficult time, your faith gives you the ability to make the right decision. And you're able to say to God, I've seen you do it before. I've seen you work before. Even though it doesn't make sense now, God, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust that you're going to work out a way, that you're going to be faithful, that you're going to be there for me. So here's what I want you to do. We've got this card that we gave you this morning. It's very simple. It says on the front, simply serve at Northway. On the back of it, you will find all these different areas where you can serve. Take one of those areas. I want you to check a box. If there's some area that you've thought about serving in before and it's not on there, create your own box. Put your name and put your email on there and say, contact me. I'm willing to step out of my boat and step out on faith and find some place to serve so that I can begin to do what I can do. God can do what only God can do. I can see God do great things, and my faith will grow as a result. Take this card, fill it out. You can drop an offering plate in just a moment. Here's why I'm asking you to do this. By doing this, by a simple act of serving, your faith will grow so that you can make, in the storms of life, the right decision. Do this today, and future you will thank you for it. Let's pray together.